You are listening to a podcast from Raritan Valley Community College.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ashley Gefganetti, for those of you who have not been to the TD Bank Leadership Development Series before. And I'm just here to welcome you to this semester's last event of this of the spring semester. The TD Bank Leadership Development Series provides participants an invaluable opportunity to improve their leadership skills, network with professional guest speakers, be inspired, and develop your student engagement transcript. If you did not notice when you walked in, there are posters of your student engagement transcript information, as well as you should have received a student engagement reminder card. And then you also received an evaluation form, so at the end, if you could fill that out and leave it at the front desk, I'd appreciate it. A special thank you needs to be given today to TD Bank, America's most convenient bank, because without their generous funding, this event would not have been made possible. This is the second year that they have supported us, and again, they have sent the check to be able to support us for another year. So a big thank you out to them. And then lastly, I'd like to thank the Office of Student Life and for all their help for helping organize this event, making sure, you know, all the forms are in and all the background stuff that we needed to know to do to make it possible. And the RVCC Foundation, they helped us get the funding from TD Bank. So a big thank you to them also for the scholarships that they provide our students. And the Office of Multicultural Affairs for providing the luncheon today. And then, of course, you guys, the student body. You guys definitely helped make this event possible. You've always been very supportive to all the speakers that come here, and it's really important for you to engage with them. So at the end, to come, you know, and shake their hand and thank them for taking their time to be here today. And this is your chance to network with a really incredible person. So today's speaker is C-Chan Siv. I had the opportunity of meeting him this past summer at Yale University for a service project with Phi Theta Kappa. And he is definitely one of the most inspirational people that I've ever met. He really touched the hearts of those that were able to meet him, and as well as the few student leaders and new members into clubs that were able to sit down and have lunch with him today. Just a little background. I don't want to give too much away from his presentation, but he's a survivor of the 1976 Cambodia killing fields, and he's going to talk about his journey from the killing fields to the White House. And in 2001, C-Chan Siv was unanimously confirmed by the Senate and appointed by George W. Bush as an ambassador to the United Nations, and he served until 2006. In 2005, Ambassador Siv represented the United States at the 60th anniversary of the UN in the footsteps of President Truman in 1945, Eisenhower 1955, Johnson 1965, and Clinton 1995. And from 1989 to 1993, Ambassador Siv served at the White House as a Deputy Assistant to President George H.W. Bush and at the House Department as Deputy Assistant Secretary. He has held various positions in the private sector and the international best-selling author of the American dream memoir, Golden Bones, and he has also authored thriller, Golden State, Love and Conflict in Hostile Lands. And you have an opportunity at the end of this event to purchase his book as well as get it signed. He holds a master's of international affairs from Columbia University and is the recipient of numerous honors and awards. And it is my privilege and my honor to welcome today Ambassador C-Chan Siv.
Thank you very much, Ashley, for the kind introduction. It is certainly a pleasure and a privilege for me to be with you today, and thank you for ordering a very beautiful day for me to drive from New York. And I reminisce my years as a taxi driver in New York City. Long time ago, I touched on it a little bit. But this is a much more beautiful drive than navigating through Manhattan traffic. What we're going to do the next 20 minutes is to take you on a journey, a travel back in time, and all the way to the other side of the planet. As Ashley mentioned, I was born in Cambodia at about a mile from this terminal right here, when Cambodia was under French rule. So everything we knew about the outside world was friends, friends, friends. I grew up speaking French. I ate French baguettes, French food. So French was a symbol of modern civilization for us until 1953, when Vice President Mrs. Nixon came to visit. And then our teachers told us that there was another country much bigger and farther away than France. It's called United States of America. My father died when I was 9 years old. So this is how you can tell how far is it from Cambodia right here on the right to Texas. And this is how it looks like. Cambodia is in the United States. It would be like the Missouri, the size of Missouri. So my father died when I was 9 years old. My mother worked very hard to send me to the best school in the kingdom, because she knew that education was very important. At one point, she had to sell lotus leaves used in poor countries in the 50s to wrap produce that people bought in the markets every morning. She told me, she instilled in me this wisdom of never give up hope, no matter what happens. That was in my heart, in my head, since I was very young. In 1969, I became a flight attendant, and I flew all over Asia. I even went to China at the peak of the Cultural Revolution. What I saw in China was unbelievable. But I never thought that a few years later, that revolution would reach my homeland. In the mid-70s, I worked in very dangerous circumstances to try to save the lives of thousands of refugees and displaced people who were fleeing the countryside, war-torn countryside, to seek safety and shelter in the capital and other provincial cities. On April 10, 1975, President Ford gave an address to the Joint Session of Congress. He said, for this administration, the time is short and the options are few as far as Cambodia and South Vietnam are concerned. When I heard that, my heart sank. I knew that the United States was going to pull out and that Cambodia and South Vietnam would just fall apart. Incidentally, this month marks the 40th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War, because 2 weeks after Cambodia fell, Vietnam also fell to the communists. So this was April 10, 1975. 2 days later, I was told by the U.S. Embassy to be at the embassy within 1 hour if I wanted to be airlifted out of Cambodia. I was concerned about the plight of some 3,000 refugee families in a stranded province. So I went to meet with the governor, trying to organize some supplies to be delivered. When I arrived at the embassy, I was told that the last helicopter had taken off 30 minutes before, so I missed the U.S. evacuation by 30 minutes. 5 days later, the Khmer Rouge came in and they turned Cambodia upside down. They killed anybody who wore glasses, sign of education. They killed teachers, nurses, business people, military personnel, government officials, anybody who had not been with them during their revolution. My mother gave me her wedding ring, her scarf, and a bag of rice. She told me to run. No matter what happens, never give up hope. So I rode a bicycle for 3 weeks using fake passes and false excuses to get through the Khmer Rouge checkpoints. I was captured near Thailand. They tied my arms behind my back and they were going to kill me that night. They suspected that I was trying to cross the border to Thailand, which was exactly my intention. A truck driver whom I had met a few days before saved my life. He said to the Khmer Rouge that I was an innocent person, that I was traveling around looking for my family. For the next year, I was put in labor camps. The whole country was turned into huge labor camps, into the killing fields. We were forced to work 18 hours a day. We were given a bowl of rancid soup a day to eat. At night, and I went to sleep, I never knew if I would be alive the following morning. When I woke up, I said I would make it to freedom. In January 1976, they were looking for a crane operator. I knew the crane was going to be used along the Thai border to pick up timber along the border, and that would increase my chances to escape. I'd never been in a crane in my life. I raised my hand. I said I was a crane operator. So at night, I burned small candles. I put a blanket over my head, and I began to study the instructions. On February the 13th, 1976, I was on the back of the timber truck, which looked like this one. I could not jump to the left nor to the right because the driver would have seen me, or the Khmer Rouge soldier with an AK-47 would have seen me through the rearview mirrors. What I did was I crawled from the front to the back and then I just dropped myself behind the truck. You can see it's a very high. When I dropped myself behind the truck, my shirt was caught on a piece of lumber and I was dragged for a few hundred yards before I was flung off. Then I picked myself up and I began to run, to crawl, to walk, to swim for 3 days, having nothing to eat or to drink. I fell in a booby trap, which is a deep hole full of punchy sticks, sharp bamboo sticks. They were supposed to catch the unlucky victims at the stomach or the heart. But I'm very tall for a Cambodian. So the sticks hit me at my legs. I was not killed, but I was severely wounded. I pulled myself out and I began to limp along until I got to Thailand. In Thailand, I was jailed for illegal entry. I had no paper. Then they realized I was a refugee, innocent refugee, so they sent me to a refugee camp. There are some 3,000 refugee families living in an area the size of a soccer field. Just imagine 3,000 people living in an area the size of a soccer field. It was hot, filthy, humid. Many suffered severe mental depression. for sitting around all day feeling sorry about the past and worrying about the future. I thought I would do something to help them out, so I organized English classes, which was a win-win proposal. Many of them were going to go to an English-speaking country, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK, the United States. So they were able to get some basic English. At the same time, they were able to take their minds off the worries and the sorrows. On June 4th, 1976, I arrived in Connecticut, Wallingford, Connecticut, with my mother's scarf, one empty rice bag, and $2. I was sick, tired, and exhausted, but I was full of hope. I wanted to adapt to America so that America would adopt me. In French, it sounds even better. S'adapter et se faire adopter. Adapt to be adopted. I did everything that came my way to the best of my abilities. I picked apples. I ate a lot of apples, enough to last for a lifetime. Then I went to work for a fast food store. I was going to be trained to be a manager, so I had to learn how to cook hamburgers, scoop ice cream, wash dishes. I never seen a hamburger in my life. Suddenly I was hearing rare, medium rare. I was holding the lettuce, and the trainer said, "Hold the lettuce." It took me a while to understand that she didn't want me to put the lettuce on the hamburger. I said, "This is very difficult." Next stop, New York, New York. Cold winter day in January 1977, I stood there at the street corner, saw all these huge yellow checker caps coming down. Signs of the back read, "Drivers wanted." So I called, and they asked me to go and take a test. It's all about directions. How do you get from Madison Square Garden to Yankee Stadium? I had no idea where these places were, much less how to get from one to another. So I just checked the boxes. At the end, I gave the sheet to the examiner. He looked at the boxes. He frowned. He looked at me from head to toe. He shook his head. He turned away. He said, "You passed." So I became a taxi driver. In 1977, you didn't need to know where you were going to drive a taxi in New York. What you need was strong horn and good brakes. And I was amazed that New Yorkers could communicate in sign language. So I applied to a number of schools. They turned me down. I knew I was going to spend the rest of my life here, and I wanted to have an American education. They turned me down because I had no transcript, except Columbia. Columbia gave me a full scholarship in its Master of International Affairs program. That's for you, Dee. So I did a Master of International Affairs program in 14 months, and I finished. I went to work on Wall Street and a few other places. And my wife, Martha, and I were introduced to the Reagans in the 80s. And we began to receive invitations to the White House. But none topped this one on the right. This was July 13, 1988. It was in the Rose Garden. And I was the guest, dais guest, of the President and Vice President of the United States. While I was standing there, the thought never crossed my mind that a few months later I would be working at the White House. I had already volunteered in the Bush campaign because I wanted to understand how presidential politics work. When I arrived in 76, there was an election between Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford. I watched TV. I saw these people wearing funny hats, jumping up and down chairs, screaming, shouting, yelling. And I didn't understand what was going on. So my host family told me that these are delegates. They are going to choose two people, and we are going to elect one of them to be the next president. Then they turned to me and said, "Sichuan, if you wanted to understand this country, you should get involved." So my chance to get involved was 1988. When Bush got elected, he asked me to go and work for him at the White House. When I walked in to work at the White House on February 13, 1989, it was exactly 13 years. 13 years from the day I jumped off that truck in northwestern Cambodia. There is no other place in the world on this planet where someone could make it from the killing fields to the top place of the country of adoption in 13 years. It's only in America. So those became my three favorite words in the English language. You may ask yourself sometime, what are my three favorite words in the English language? You got mail. Checks coming, right? I love you. So those are very, very powerful three English words. But for me, only in America. Under Bush, the Cold War ended. Eastern Europe became free. The Berlin Wall came down. Germany became united. The Soviet Union fell apart. And there I was, sitting at the White House, seeing history taking shape in front of my eyes. Only 13 years after I was running for my life in the jungle. That was quite overwhelming, to say the least. One of the pieces of wisdom I remembered most was this from George Bush, when he said on June 22nd, 1989, that any definition of a successful life must include serving others. Simply means that life is not complete unless you're able to bring somebody along when you move ahead. Life is very beautiful when you're able to help others. Among many things, he declared May as the Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, because this is a recognition of what Americans of Asian ancestry have contributed to our society. That is what makes America strong. It's ethnic diversity, a pluribus unum. We came from many and we became one. You recognize a few astronauts there, Laura. This is one. Unizuki, and then there's Pawagawa in the middle. And you recognize an ambassador, a golfer, and a governor, and a TV personality, and Norm Mineta is quite, he's one of my role models. He was in a prison camp, in the Japanese internment camp, and he worked his way up to become a congressman, the mayor of San Jose, and he has an airport named after him. When you fly to San Jose, you fly to Norm Mineta Airport. So I tell him that I'm I'm the only one who knows a person who the airport was named after. And he told me that his parents named him after an airport. But these are the people, some of the people that make our country strong and important. 2001, George W. Bush sent me to the United Nations, which is a special place for us. As I was sharing my thought with the students at lunch, this is a place that we co-founded. We co-founded the United Nations. We play host. New York is the world's largest diplomatic community, and we are the largest benefactor to many United Nations programs. You name it, from cradle to coffin, from children to aging, everything in between, HIV, AIDS, food crisis, human rights, women, children, we are there at the top. We are doing this not to be popular. We are doing this because it is our duty to honor our country. When I walked in, my colleagues from 191 countries looked at me. Through me, they saw you. They saw America, her strength, her greatness, her future. They wanted to hear what I had to say. Each time I pronounce on behalf of the president and the people of the United States, that was my proudest moment. America is never a conquering power. We respond to earthquakes and tsunamis. We help improve health and education, women and children. We give voice to the voiceless. We protect human rights. And we are building democratic prosperity. That is because we are a compassionate society, because we are Americans. Among the travels that I made for the United States, this is probably one of the most memorable ones. This was in 2004. I was sent to Cambodia to represent the United States at the coronation of the new king. You know, kings, they have a lifetime job, right? Once you're a king until you die, unless you abdicate. This king on the left here, he was on the throne when FDR was at the White House. Just imagine he was on the throne in 1941, right on the lower left corner. So there I was sitting in the throne hall. You see, that's the throne hall behind me. And I was the only dignitary invited from a foreign capital. All the countries were represented by ambassadors accredited to Cambodia. So there I was in the throne hall, representing my country of adoption at the coronation of the king of my country of birth. I may be one of the few people, or maybe even the only one in history to have done that. But that is because only in America. So moving on, it has been an honor for me to work for two presidents named Bush. I used to say that I worked behind the bushes. So all of this summarized in this book called Golden Bones, which is printed in a few languages. Golden Bones are terms Cambodians use to refer to somebody who is very blessed, very lucky. They call that person a person of golden bones. I think we all are people of golden bones because we are blessed, because we are lucky to be Americans or to be living in America. We were able to publish another book called Golden State, which is what I call a fiction based on facts. It's a political thriller that has a lot of intrigue between the major powers, United States, France, Russia, and China, and of course the financial world and the United Nations International Organization. It involves a number of countries around the world, but it's about love. It's about conflict. It's about the society. Wherever it is, it still has problems. Corruption, crime, impunity, and so on and so forth. At home, we like to interact with young people like you, because as I said at lunchtime, you are my inspiration also. Ashley and Laura and Dee and everybody and Angela. Inspiration is not from older one to younger one. I mean, it can be from anybody. My wife told me remarks one day that I make friends all the time. Because when I came here, I knew no one. I did not even know my host family. I made friends all the time. I learned from those people. A fourth grader in Virginia taught me how to describe my life in one word. Now, one day you will have to explain to somebody how do you describe your life in one word. And I struggled for a few seconds, and then I came up with the word hopeful. So in one word, my life is hopeful. And it turned out that her name is Hope. A 90-something swimming coach responded to my greetings by saying, "I am too blessed to be stressed." And then I have another friend who was 101 years old when she told me this. She said, "Please forgive me for not being thankful enough. Please forgive me for not being thankful enough." So here we go, United States Air Force Academy. And this red jacket group is a group called CDE, where people up to 24 spend 1 year helping underperforming students. Then you have the cadet of the Civil Air Patrol, which I've been a member since I was at the White House. We provide aerospace education, cadet programs, emergency services, and now we are going into Homeland Security. And you have the scouts at the bottom. This is one of my favorite slides. I always tell young people, I hope you all know how to ride bicycle, right? Is anyone that doesn't ride a bicycle? Good. Bravo. But I told young people, I've been telling them that life is it's like riding a bike. You have to keep on pedaling. Otherwise, you will fall. So in your life, you have to grow something every day. If not, you're dying a little bit every day. So these are children learning how to ride bikes. And here at a school called Concordia Lutheran, they teach children to love one another, to love the family, to love the community, the country, and the world. And the initial BPP that stands for the following questions. I usually ask them, if you were a boat, what would you be, a speed boat or a cruise ship or an aircraft carrier? The second P, if you were a plane, what would you be? You would be a jet fighter or you would be a big plane like a 747 that carries a lot of people or a C5 Galaxy? And have you ever asked yourself what kind of person you are? Are you a beach person? So with that, I want to leave with this. Be well, be wise, be worthy. Be flexible and able to adapt. Now that's the next slide. That is one
This is the next slide, yeah. But this slide, when you get older, somebody else should be 90 years old. And what are you going to do? You sit around the corner, like Joshua said, you don't have to sit around the corner, and I'm doing something. This gentleman I met last week, on the right, he's 90 years old, and he is the state champion for swimming. He just sent me an email yesterday that he won another gold medal. So that's the people who are really role models. Because when you get old, that doesn't mean that you can stay around. And this one, and you recognize George H.W. Bush, right? Has anybody been skydiving yet? You, good job. Good job. And this is the last. Even be wise, even be flexible and able to adapt to difficult circumstances. Follow your passion. You want to be a journalist, you'll be a journalist. You want to be an astrophysicist, you'll be an astrophysicist. You'll be an international relations specialist, you'll be one. So follow your passion. When you do well, don't forget to do good. May God bless you and God bless America. Thank you.